94.7 The Pulse in Geelong. We're going diet now. We have a young lady in the studio. We hope will be a regular on the show, new to our region. Gemma O'Hanlon, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rob.
Gemma, let's find a little bit about you, your career choice, and what has driven you to, I hope, to make people's lives better by being healthier.
Well, I was in the kitchen from the age of three. My mum had me in the kitchen and I had a sweet tooth. I still do. So I was baking cakes and brownies and lemon meringue pies and apple crumbles. And it was my thing. And then I actually got into gymnastics when I was a little bit older. I was a competitive gymnast for many, many years. And so I sort of naturally got into the whole, you know, fitness and health. And so I started to tweak my recipes to develop them in a way that was a little bit more nourishing. So maybe using wholemeal flour instead of white flour and a bit more fruit in there and a little bit less sugar. And
so this is in your teen years.
Yeah, that's right. But I've always loved food. And so it was natural to sort of then, when I went to finish school, I did science at school, biology and chemistry, thank goodness, because I needed them to actually get into my dietetics course. And the rest is history. I did 4 solid years at university up in Queensland. I'm a Queenslander born and bred, but moved to Victoria around 13 years ago. I've been in the industry ever since, working in a range of different sectors. So I started off my career working in food service. Then I went into sort of food manufacturing and product development. Then I sort of took a turn into food production and working in the horticulture sector, and most recently in public health with charities and not-for-profit sector. So I've done a little bit of everything, but I absolutely love helping people to eat well and find simple solutions to make life easier for them.
Mm. And is a motivational point to change people, do you build it on fear? Because it's a case of you do this or else, as opposed to, you know, your life could be better if you tried this instead of that. How do you go about getting that message across? Because education is a part of what we're talking about this morning.
For me, it's all about positives and nudging people in the right direction. I never talk about fear because I don't think people generally respond well to fear. So for me, it's all about helping people to nudge them in the right direction, you know, add an extra fruit or veg to their daily, you know, intake that they're already having, and inspire them to cook and try new things. And I find that really cuts through, because if you tell people what not to eat, for example, if I just said today, don't eat McDonald's, don't eat KFC, don't eat cakes and biscuits and lollies, all you've got in your mind are those foods and you're thinking, actually, I'm a bit hungry now. I might actually go down and grab some lollies. So I feel like we, as dietitians, we really focus on what to eat rather than what not to eat.
Now, there's a word that I'm still trying to understand what it actually means, but it's the word metabolism. And what I have found is that we're all different. There's different ways that people, that some bodies deal with certain sort of food. So that's why friends of mine who eat more than I do and are as skinny as rakes and fit as trouts without doing anything different to me, whereas I crack open a stubby and put on half a kilo. These are the things. So in your role, is understanding and dealing with different metabolisms an important part when having a face-to-face?
Absolutely. And we're all different. We're all unique. We all come in different shapes and sizes. And I'm really supportive of an approach that tailors advice to that individual. You know, I myself need to exercise regularly and eat well to maintain a healthy body weight. I'm not one of the lucky ones that can just eat whatever they like. But regardless, you know, that's not what I would recommend as a dietitian anyway. But I think we all have opportunities in our lives to move more and eat a little better. And I think it's about finding ways that work for us, something that actually fits into our daily routine and that we make it a habit, because we start that habit, if it just becomes the norm, then it's just part of our lifestyle. And that's much healthier, and you're going to be much more successful than going on some sort of crash diet. Because let's be honest, diets don't work. We might try them. We often lose a lot of water when we go on crash diets, and not as much body fat. And the moment we turn back to what, you know, the foods that we were eating and the foods that we really love and enjoy, the weight comes back on. So we need to make sustainable changes.
What are your thoughts on the current diet that I hear about all the time is the 12-8, whatever it is, where people fast for so many hours and then they don't eat till after 8 o'clock at night or whatever? I know. What are your thoughts on those? There's various versions of it.
There is intermittent fasting. It's very popular, and its emerging research is developing. You know, we know that shift workers really struggle to maintain a healthy weight simply because of that circadian rhythm and the fact that they're, you know, usually sleeping and eating in the opposite times than what most people do. And there is science behind that. In terms of that window, I think, you know, the window, the intermittent fasting suggests that we don't eat during. I think the larger the window, the more there's a risk of sort of going a little bit off track and I guess struggling to fit it into our daily lifestyle. For example, if you had to stop eating at 6 p.m. and you had a social function or a dinner that night, what are you going to do? Sort of, it doesn't really fit into, I guess, some of those social norms. And also, I think when we try to really starve ourselves almost or stop eating too early when our natural instincts are telling us to eat, it's sort of, It doesn't really work for a lot of people. And what tends to happen is then the window that you're allowed to eat, you're going to be, you know, jumping in and grabbing whatever you can find and possibly then actually exceeding your calorie intake for the day in the window that you're allowed to eat. So what I tell people usually, you know, 8 to 12 hour rest is good for the body. But I don't think there's enough evidence at this stage to suggest that we need to be fasting for 16, 18 hours a day sort of thing. I think that's when we can get into a bit of trouble.
I agree. I found that if I haven't eaten, if I was here now and I hadn't eaten a single, you said you hadn't had breakfast yet. If I hadn't had anything to eat, I'd probably be talking garbage at the moment because the brain would not have got what it needs and would not be in gear.
Yeah, that's one of the metabolism things. I used to eat big breakfast and remain hungry and find I was overeating. So I've cut out one of the three meals and that's breakfast. I don't know whether that's healthy. Might have a chat off air about that.
Have you had a coffee or anything?
I've had a cup of coffee.
And that's all you've had today?
That's all I've had today. Wow, okay. And I've been to the gym for 45 minutes as well, which is probably not super healthy. But that's a chat for another day. It's 18 minutes to 10 o'clock. We're with Gemma O'Hanlon, who is a dietitian. Gemma, one of the other issues that a lot of people will be facing these days, and you're talking about eating times, but eating financially, because a lot of people are shopping different because they have to, because they just don't have the funds. So is that a dangerous time that you might be buying cheaper foods that you can afford, but they're actually less healthy for you?
Spot on. And I think that's the worry. And in fact, research has demonstrated that even in global studies have found that people are choosing more ultra-processed foods to try to, you know, just fill
meet
up
the
on
budget.
Meet the budget, but they're not really going to actually keep them fuller for longer and give them the energy they need to get through their day and fuel their body and fuel their brain in a way that is optimal. So there's certainly so many ways you can eat well on a budget, and I love this topic because there's so many foods. For example, I started this morning, for breakfast, I had oats. I had porridge, which is made on oats and milk. Oats are a superfood. They are super cheap. Rolled oats, you can buy them. They're very accessible and they are so healthy. They help to lower our cholesterol. They're a heart healthy food. So muesli, oats, porridge in the morning is
what about
is a really
people that skip breakfast
way.
In the morning though?
Well,
what do you think about that?
That's a conversation off me.
Be honest here, Gemma.
I think everyone's different. Some people don't have an appetite in the morning, and I completely understand that. I think so. I always say, listen to your hunger and eat when you feel hungry, and don't eat if you don't feel hungry. Yeah. But of course, we still need to balance that with getting our key food groups in across the day. So let's talk about another food, lentils, beans, chickpeas. I know they're not everyone's favourite.
However, you can have fun in the kitchen putting them in instead of red meat. And that is what is happening in our household at the moment. And I must admit, I'm enjoying it.
So, for example, a spaghetti bolognese, you know, family favourite. Use half the mince that you'd usually use and lentils.
Or all lentils.
Yep. Or totally. Well, there you go, Rob. I'm impressed. So, exactly. So lentils are a plant protein. We hear the plant protein term a lot these days, and there's more and more research demonstrating their benefits. Yes, there are, you know, if you don't eat them all the time, you might want to increase your intake gradually to have less, you know, digestive side effects. But generally, they're so good for us. They're cheap. Buy the canned ones. If you don't want to sort of soak or boil your dried ones, just buy the canned ones. Drain the water away and you're ready to go. Throw them in your bolognese sauce and they will really bulk it up. And the great thing about legumes as well is they don't have a lot of flavor on their own, but it means you can team them with big, bold flavors. So big herbs, big spices. I made a beautiful dal the other night, sweet potato dal with some lentils and some sweet potato, canned tomatoes, you know, a few spices, turmeric, cumin, you know, those sort of things. It was amazing. My partner, Max, he absolutely loved it. And he's a big guy, you know, that loves his meat. And he was going back for seconds.
Well, I know you like to dabble in the kitchen, Michael. My problem with legumes was that they were bland. They didn't taste nice. It wasn't an enjoyable meal. But it's then adding, and tomato is probably the best one to give something that's a bit bland a zing. And when you get into cooking those Italian-style meals, but changing the ingredient, you can still have a very tasty meal and it's doing you the world of good.
Absolutely. So, and the other thing to think about when it comes to eating well on a budget, wherever possible, cook at home. I think that's the other real tip I would give today is when we cook at home using some simple whole food ingredients, we can save a lot of money. We save the delivery fee from Uber Eats. You know, we save on the cost that companies add to, you know, when they cost out their ready meals that, you know, the chefs that have prepared it and the packaging costs and all that. We save on that when we do it ourselves. And you don't have to spend hours and hours and hours in the kitchen. You can do something really quick and easy.
So let's tie in your two skill sets. And one of the things we've talked about health and nutrition, we've talked about finances. And one of the issues, and I've seen it firsthand, is children having very poor diets because of circumstances in which they live. They come to school and once again they haven't had breakfast, and that's definitely not healthy for a young person, I'll admit that. So, Michael, you're probably seeing it in the school system of children who are really deprived, living in bad circumstances, that have bad diets, maybe don't even have lunch.
One of the key things that when you go to a place like Finland where they lead world education is that they provide lunch for a full cooked lunch for every student every day. And for many of those students, that might be the best meal they get that day. And regardless of what they've had for breakfast, they're going to be really looking forward to that. And it makes them feel at home. It makes them feel like school is a welcoming place and so on. So it really does sort of change the whole atmosphere of school by providing that.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
So, Gemma, the importance of young bodies, feeding young bodies with the right food. And again, hopefully parents listening this morning, that we understand the circumstances of being in financially restrictive situations, but what are some of the less expensive but important ways of getting good, healthy food into children?
Well, look, you know, this is a real issue at the moment with cost of living rising. And I think, you know, the schools that are putting on these lunches or breakfasts, I think that's absolutely amazing. And as Mike said, it's just such a critical aspect of getting the nutrients in when, you know, things are really, you know, in a challenging place. And I would say we need more of that. We need more. We need dietitians in every school across Australia. We don't have that to help schools, you know, make sure that they can help children to meet their needs. But busy parents, you know, there's an easy lunch, you know, maybe it's as simple as swapping white bread to wholemeal bread with the sandwich that you make to get some extra fiber in to help your child feel fuller for longer. You know, sneaking some veggies in, you know, I always had a tub of yogurt in my breakfast, and a banana or a piece of fruit. You know, fruit doesn't have to be expensive. We, and especially down here, let's be honest, we've got amazing produce all around us. So I think going back to whole foods, going back to, I think the more packaged a food is as well, again, the more, you know, the more cost it's going to be, and you're actually paying for that packaging and that manufacturing process and so on. So if we can, you know, steer away from, you know, the occasional packaged food is okay. For example, a muesli bar that's made from oats and isn't coated in all the chocolate, that's going to be okay. And it's sort of a bit of a sweet snack for children. I mean, I like muesli bars that I have a snack for myself. So I think we need to be real about what children like to eat. Even cheese and crackers is a great little snack. So there's so many different options out there. And the variety is important as well. Lots of colours, lots of textures, and trying new foods with children. I think sometimes studies have found it takes up to 10 times of offering a child a food before they'll actually accept it. So don't give up if they don't accept it straight away, or if the food comes back in the lunchbox. That's okay, and we don't need to create a big scene or a big drama about that. You know, children, that's part of growing up, and that's really normal.
The importance of a piece of fruit a day, it's talked about a lot, but it's just getting the child to eat it, and sometimes even the adult. Guilty as anyone, because there's not a lot that I instinctively like, but bananas are quick and easy. I quite like them. I try and take one for lunch every day, knowing that that is going to be of assistance. But youngsters maybe take a little bit more goading to have that piece of fruit, but it's important to present it at least.
And do you know what? A fun fact is that fruit that is chopped up is more likely to be eaten by kids. So, you know, think about when you have some, you know, and this is more in the summer, when you have beautiful chopped watermelon ready to go. Kids love that. You know, when food is presented in a way that little fingers can grab that and pop it in their mouth and eat it, they're going to be more likely to do that. So maybe instead of having a whole apple in the lunchbox, you could just slice it into little cubes, and then you could pair it with some little cubes of cheese perhaps. And then it's almost like a bit of a special cheese and apple combination, which we know is delicious. So it's little things like that can help kids to easily get their intake every day.
Well, Michael's given me a whack about my lack of breakfast, but at my age, is it something that I would manage better than a child going to school where they need to have their brain alert, active to take in what the teachers are giving them? How much different is a young body needing to be fed than someone of my vintage?
Well, I think we all need to be fed well regardless of our age. So I think, you know, fueling your body, Rob, is just as important as fueling a child's body. But I think, again, we're all different, and we can all eat at different times of the day that work for us. And the most important thing is that we're getting our, you know, food groups in, you know, our fruits and our vegetables, our whole grains, our healthy proteins, our healthy fats, you know, our dairy or alternatives. Those are all healthy food groups that we need every day. But, you know, certainly there's really good research to demonstrate that children are more focused, are more, you know, alert, and, you know, work better when they have, when they've eaten breakfast. So, and I think, you know, it's not the sort of Cocoa Pox style breakfast. It's, you know, a wholesome breakfast, like some Weet-Bix or some whole grain toast with a bit of peanut butter on it, or, you know, a porridge or muesli. There's lots of different options.
It's amazing, Rob, the number of kids I'll see in schools who have got energy drinks, chips, Coke, things like that for their to eat. And then in some of the better schools, well, I say better schools, the schools where the staff are really, really good, you'll see the vice principal and people like that preparing toasties and things like that for kids who've got nothing. You know, yeah, it's, that's the other side is some amazing people that really do go out of their way to help kids. But, yeah, when I see kids with chips and mother, you know, those energy drinks, you know, some of them are, like, huge. And I just think I wouldn't take that much caffeine, you know. But there's, you know, a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old having something like that. It's quite unfortunate.
And that's just shocking, isn't it? It's, I mean, they shouldn't even be having caffeine at that age, and let alone all the sugar and all the additives, and that's very dangerous. So, yeah, it's quite shocking. Mm.
Gemma, I hope you've had a good time today, because I'd love you to come back and talk more, because there's two ideas that have already come. That's one of them, about the challenge of you coming here today to talk good, and knowing that the same people who are listening to this are going to hear 100 ads today for Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, whatever the case may be, knowingly putting bad food into people's bodies, and here you are trying to do the right thing. So we might pursue that. And I'd also like to talk to you another day about different cultural diets, because when we have a world now that's so interspersed, and we've got maybe a Scandinavian diet as opposed to a South American diet, and they come together, and how the body reacts to different sorts of foods, and what is the food that instinctively that body was eating 100, 200 years ago. That fascinates me as well, because you know, some cultures probably never had red meat. They were totally grain-based diets, and a lot of fish in some of the Asian countries that we don't eat much of, and how much difference that makes to this metabolism mystery that still compounds me.
I'd love to talk about it. And just on those cultural cuisines and diets, I think there's no one perfect diet. And really, some of those traditional diets are some of the healthiest diets in the world.
Yeah.
So love to explore that further.
Gemma, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Lovely to meet you at last. We've had a few goes, but you, like myself, have had a whack of COVID, which interrupted your coming in, but really enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes.
Thanks for
having
me.
And we will arrange for you to come back again another day. I quite enjoy